of the NFL, folks.
You're listening to The Troy Murphy Show.
Gentlemen, them, they, and all, welcome to the Troy Murphy Show. I am, of course, your host, Troy Murphy, and this, as the name suggests, is the Troy Murphy Show. And what is the Troy Murphy Show, I hear you ask? Well, it's an opinion-based talk show with something for everyone, but not everything for everyone. We encourage debate, discussion, as we sometimes put our serious hats on to look at the big issues in the news. And on the other side of the coin, we like to take a look at the weird, wacky, wonderful news from around the world to, well, you know, have a good laugh at. Because even though we like the serious, we also like to not be serious. You know, it's like a yin and yang balance and all sort of thing. Big thank you to the one and only Jamie Sims for taking on the first hour of Drive this afternoon. Great music this week, Jamie. Loved it to bits. Apologies for accidentally hijacking your show with my testing, as I forgot that my studio was live. Radio problems. Anyway, of course, every day, my friends, is a celebration, and today, being the first day of the month of December in the year 2022, we celebrate World Blue Christmas Day. Now, again, I was mistaken when I found out that, well, when I first learnt it was World Blue Christmas Day, I thought, it was a day that celebrated being sad about the upcoming onslaught of jolliness, you know, Christmas songs and intolerant busy shoppers at the local supermarket. But no, it is not that, not at all. It's actually a day for those who work in law enforcement, such as police and firefighters and EMTs, etc. And it's for them to be celebrated and thanked into the lead up to the holiday season. So thank you to all of our emergency and frontline workers for your hard work and dedication all year long and into the holiday season too. It is indeed a thankless job and they do it mighty fine, they do. The next one, not really a celebration, but rather a day of awareness. Today is World AIDS Day, a day to remember the lives lost to bring awareness to the, well, safe adult practices. Later in the show, I'll be chatting to the CEO of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations about World AIDS Day to see just how we're doing in Australia as a country as we aim to end the HIV epidemic by 2025. Famous birthdays, something new to the show. Famous birthdays, today's birthdays are comedian Richard Pryor and Woody Allen. Now, this week, we often get told in radio as a guide to being a good host is to get into the personal lives, share a little bit of personal information, and that's what I'm going to do right here before we get into our top five of the week. This week, I was on the phone with a friend. He lives overseas, and we speak a couple of times a week, and, you know, generally our conversations go for 4 hours long. Very long conversations. Great time. But part of the conversation was the pronunciation of the brand name Adidas, or Adidas. He says Adidas, I say Adidas. Now, if you've ever wondered if there are little men living inside your phone listening, neither my friend nor I shop that brand, nor are we general fans of the brand, nor would we search it out online. However, what happened to my friend the next time he logged into YouTube? Up came a recommended video on the pronunciation of Adidas, or Adidas. Coincidence, ladies and gentlemen? I think not. Which brings us to this week's top five. Our top five things to say whilst on the phone, whether it be in a conversation or just talking to yourself, to mess with the algorithm.
Five.
Glow-in-the-dark toilet roll. Yep. Just say glow-in-the-dark toilet roll. general conversation, just throw it in. Doesn't matter, it doesn't have to make sense. Just throw it in just to confuse the algorithm. Bound to mess with it.
4.
What do I do if a dolphin wants to mate with me? That's at number 4. That'll confuse the algorithm. Floor cleaning slippers are the greatest thing since sliced bread. And aren't they just that?
2.
Yodeling pickles. That one, my friends, will definitely confuse the algorithm if you start talking about yodeling pickles. Because, well, let's be frank, pickles don't yodel. And good way to confuse the algorithm, because good luck trying to suggest yodeling pickles in a YouTube or Google search or a Facebook ad that pops up after you talk about it. And of course, that brings us to Are babies dishwasher safe? That is the top thing that you can say during a conversation on the phone with a friend or a colleague or your boss or a spam caller to confuse the algorithm. Because it's in my... I believe that if you mess up the algorithm by throwing in random phrases like that, it's going to confuse it so much that it's going to leave you alone. And for those who were wondering... the pronunciation of Adidas or Adidas, well, according to Adidas CEO Kasper Rorsted, he believes, well, no, he doesn't believe, he says.
So the founder of the company was called Adidas. So the right pronunciation is Adidas.
Adidas is the correct pronunciation, so all of you who are saying Adidas, you're wrong. It's Adidas. Not that I care. I don't wear the brand. They don't sponsor the show or the station, but, you know, just in case you were wondering. On the show this week, ladies and gentlemen, being World AIDS Day, of course, the CEO of Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations is joining us for a chat. We'll be looking at the 2020 Word of the Year, as well as the latest terminology being used in the dating world. It is very intriguing indeed. We'll also chat the latest COVID news, the near-deadly art of Monopoly, we'll chat about that, as well as the latest crazy aviation news from the US of A. It's becoming a bit of a running trend here on the show. And we'll also ask, what is Greta Thunberg up to now? But first, a tribute to one of the world's greatest singers from one of the world's greatest bands, Christine McVie, the British-born Fleetwood Mac vocalist, songwriter and keyboard artist who sadly passed away today at the age of 79. She was one of a kind. She was special and talented beyond measure. I was very, very fortunate to see them live when they toured Australia last. And, you know, I'm not one for concerts, mostly because of crowds, but this was beyond measure. Vale, Christine McVie, may your legacy live on forever as we celebrate your contribution to the music world. amazing music that has stood the test of time. And with that, my friends, let's dive headfirst into this week's show without any safety gear, because that's how we do things here on the Troy Murphy Show, responsibly.
It seems today that all you hear is music on the radio and murder on podcasts. But where are those good old-fashioned talk shows on which we used to rely? Lucky there's a Troy Murphy Show. Lucky there's a man who will positively can do all the things that make us tune in live.
To the Troy Murphy Show.
Ponder this, ladies and gentlemen. A gay guy at a girl's sleepover is normal, but a lesbian girl at a boy's sleepover is unheard of.
2SSR FM 99.7.
Oh, the weather tomorrow. Friday, tops of 20 degrees, a mostly sunny day. Saturday, 21 degrees, mostly sunny. Sunday, 22, mostly sunny. And Monday off next week, tops of 23 degrees and a sunny day. What a way to kick off next week. Ladies and gentlemen, as it was the big story that all around the world was talking about, and that was Greta Thunberg suing Sweden over the climate crisis. Yes, just when you were at home thinking, what has Greta been up to after she trashed the latest the COP27 meeting for promoting false values? Well, taking to Twitter, Thunberg wrote, and I quote, "Today on Black Friday is the perfect day to sue the state over its insufficient climate policies. So that's what we did. See you in court," end quote. Now, I know this was last week, but I couldn't not bring it up because it's a big story. And, you know, we do like to take a look at what's going on with the activists here on the Troy Murphy Show. She was not alone. She was joined by 600 other plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Sweden as they attempt at a cheap and trashy grab for cash. Or were they being serious? That is the question. All who, apart of the lawsuit, claim that Sweden's climate policies violated the Constitution along with the European Convention of Human Rights. Now, from what I understand, Sweden adopted a climate law in 2017 requiring the government to work to reduce emissions of planet-warming gases towards the net-zero target set for 2045, similar to what we have done here in Australia. And this group, well, they believe that the Swedish state has failed to meet the constitutional requirement to promote sustainable development, leading to a good environment for present and future generations. So let's make this relevant for us here in Australia. Remember in September when the Australian federal government passed a climate change bill ensuring Australians' emissions reduction target of 43% and then net zero emissions by 2050? Well, what happens when those targets are not reached? Will activists in Australia sue, or will Greta come down under in her non-polluting boat to have a crack at the Australian justice system? Good questions indeed. But let's look at the reality of this. As bold and as brave of a move as this is from Greta and her climate crew, good luck winning the case. Imagine the precedent it would set for being able to sue a government for not keeping a promise it made, and the historical back case can of worms it would open. Absolutely crazy. I think we should file this story under as in what is going on, and maybe bookmark this for a follow-up as more details come available. Makes you realize, though, you should never get into arguments about climate change. It always turns into a heated debate. Oh, where's my boom tish? Coming up next, it's become a regular on the show as we take a look at the weird, wacky antics happening in American airports and the skies.
Stay tuned. More from the Troy Murphy Show coming up right after this.
2SSR can help you promote your business. with an innovative and inexpensive marketing plan. Our in-house team will help you design a campaign, voice the audio, and give it the professional production values you need. To find out more, call us on 9545 1800 or email info@2SSR.com.au to organise a talk with our experienced marketing team.
Hi, it's Kale. Hope you can join me for Friday Night Live every Friday from 7 to 9pm for a mix of pop and indie music, interviews with interesting people, and all the music and entertainment news from the Shire, Sydney and beyond. Friday Night Live, 7pm on 2SSR 99.7 FM. I'll see you there.
The Troy Murphy Show.
Ponder this, ladies and gentlemen. Really muscular people must taste terrible.
2SSR FM 99.7.
File this one under as there seems to be a lot of crazy things happening at American airports and now planes. Really big dymo table. Dymo tab for the file. Unless you handwrite it. Anyway, for the last couple of weeks, we've been reporting the weird, wacky, sometimes wonderful news from American airports. We've had guns being smuggled inside raw chickens and cats stowing away inside luggage. And now, a woman who the FBI said forced a Southwest Airlines plane from Houston to Columbus, Ohio, to make an emergency landing on Saturday. She said mid-flight that Jesus told her to open the plane door. This is according to court documents released on Monday. Yes, I read court documents for fun in my spare time. No, not really. It was just a news article that I'm repurposing for the show. The report claims that the 34-year-old walked to the back of the plane where she stared at the exit door for only flight attendants to ask the woman to either use the bathroom or sit down. Another flight attendant said that the female passenger asked two flight attendants if she could look out the window. And when she received a negative response from the flight attendants, she forced her way past the attendant and began to pull at the handle at the exit door in an attempt to open the door at 37,000 feet. A passenger close by overheard someone saying, "She's trying to open the door!" And went to the rear of the plane and helped detain the woman, wrestling her to the ground, but not before she bit the passenger on the thigh and apparently held on. Now, documents said that the woman continued to bite the victim until the victim worked his finger up to her jawline in an attempt to have her release the bite, which she did eventually, luckily. But the document said that the woman began hitting her head on the plane door and then later said Jesus told her to fly to Ohio and then Jesus told her to open the plane door. Now, I don't want to make light of the mentally unstable, but having a plane door open mid-flight all because a person claims Jesus told them to do so is not the Mile High Club that I want to join. I tell you what, if these stories keep coming, I am never, ever going to want to travel by plane in America ever again. Don't forget, if you miss the show or want to listen back to any broadcast, be sure to subscribe to the Troy Murphy Show podcast, available on iTunes and Spotify. Now, coming up next, just how deadly is the board game Monopoly? Intrigued? You should be. Stick around because we'll be talking about that right after this.
The Troy Murphy Show.
Eyebrows are so weird. Ponder this, ladies and gentlemen. Eyebrows are so weird. It's in the most random spot, and it cuts off from hair to skin ever so suddenly. Weird things, eyebrows. But then again, it's weirder if you don't have eyebrows.
2SSR FM 99.7.
20 minutes past 6 p.m. And of course, if you are not in Sydney, it would be a different time, of which you would probably be easier for you to check your watch or smartphone or the time of the car stereo or kitchen microwave or sundial, depending on where you happen to be, or check the time. As we file this next segment under, be careful what family games you play this holiday season. It may end in more than just tears. Long file now name, but relevant as an Oklahoma man. Oh, Oklahoma. I was arrested, not for singing badly like I just did. I probably should be singing that, arrested for singing that badly. But he was arrested after shooting at family members during a family game of Monopoly. Of course it was Monopoly. We've all had family disagreements over the game of Monopoly, but hopefully no one listening has ever had an experience of guns being pulled on them. Who brings a gun to a game of Monopoly? You know, a car, a top hat, a ship, a dog, yes. A gun? No. Let's read the report so we understand it together. The headline, this article came from the Daily Mail, and the headline reads, real life go to jail card. 10 points for that headline. Tasteless, funny, and well-linked. Inappropriate too, but you know, let's go on to the report. There was no collecting $200 for one Oklahoma man who went directly to jail after firing a gun at his family members during a game of Monopoly on Saturday. The man's name is John Ronald Dwayne Armstrong, and he was arrested after a round of the game erupted into an argument with the table and the game's board being flipped in. Now, that's normally where we stop. Normal people would stop. You know, you have your little hissy fit, you flip the board, you stop. But no, this John guy, he continued. He then allegedly chased his stepsister and stepfather down the street while pointing a gun at them. Officers with the Tulsa Police Department were called to the home at around 6:30 p.m. on the day for reports of shots being fired. When police arrived, they immediately took Armstrong into custody. Investigators learned that the family had been drinking alcohol and playing Monopoly when the fight broke out. Well, let's just add that one to the list. No drinking alcohol whilst playing Monopoly, especially if you've got a gun. Allegedly, the man pulled the gun on his stepfather after getting cut in the head when the Monopoly board was flipped. Officers did not find the gun, saying that they believe Armstrong hid it in the house before surrendering. Not that anyone in my family is a gun-toting loose cannon. Well, that could be debatable. You don't know my family. But no one would. I'm just joking. But in case, I'm not going to be suggesting Monopoly this year for family Christmas Day lunchtime gaming. Oh boy. Stick around, because coming up later in the show, we talk World AIDS Day with the CEO of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisation. And up next, the latest on COVID.
The Troy Murphy Show presents 30 Seconds of Calm. The Troy Murphy Show.
Ponder this. Everyone owns at least one human skull.
2SSR FM 99.7.
Never miss a beat. To learn all about your favourite shows that this amazing station has to offer, head to the 2SSR website, 2SSR.com.au, as we file this next segment under COVID Update 879,001. There's been a lot of COVID reports, let's be honest. We're a little bit COVID tired, but just when you thought COVID was over, just like a turtle poking its head out, that kind of has two meanings, but There were two COVID stories there in the news this week. One concerning and the other one, well, who didn't see that coming? Which is which? I'll let you decide. The first one to the birthplace of COVID, China, where protests have broken out this week in relation to the continued draconian treatment of citizens forced into lockdown in an effort for zero transmission. If you haven't been paying attention, China is going for zero transmission. Now, people in China are protesting after they learned that residents were unable to escape their apartment because their doors were sealed by authorities in the province of the far western region of Xinjiang. And I probably butchered that pronunciation, but let's move on. Due to the pandemic prevention measures, where 10 people died last week in a fire after being locked down for 3 months. Imagine being locked into your unit for 3 months. Actually, that'd be heaven, really. I wouldn't have to go out and see people. Chinese people, according to the ABC, are protesting with blank white pages and repeating words such as good and okay in an effort to get around censorship. In China, the public are forbidden to speak ill of the Chinese government or the president, Xi Jinping. But that hasn't stopped them. Protesters are calling for Xi Jinping to step down as president for life. This is most certainly a wait, watch and see protest movement. Closer to home, the New South Wales government has conceded that two COVID-19 fines being challenged in the Supreme Court test case are invalid, opening the door to more than 30,000 other people to have fines worth $30 million cancelled. I didn't realise that the state government revenue raised that much money during COVID. Redfern Legal Centre brought the case on behalf of three of its clients who received fines ranging from $1,000 to $3,000 during the 2021 public health lockdowns. It was argued that the fines did not meet the requirements of the Section 20 under the Fines Act, and that the case centred on the technical basis that the notices do not provide a sufficiently detailed description of the offence committed and were therefore invalid. Within a matter of hours, this is how fast this was. I've never seen the government work so fast. Within hours, the government moved to withdraw more than half of the infringements issued under New South Wales COVID-19 restrictions, and in a statement issued after the ruling, Revenue New South Wales confirmed it would withdraw 33,121 fines. Now, to put that into perspective, there were a total of 62,128 COVID-related infringements issued in the state throughout the pandemic. This has been a massive, massive can of worms opened. Stick around. Coming up next, we talk the latest terminology being used in the dating world.
Stay tuned. More from the Troy Murphy Show coming up right after this.
Would you like to be involved in your local not-for-profit radio station? Would you like to become a 2SSR volunteer with the opportunity to be a presenter, provide office support or help with community events? If you would like to be part of the 2SSR family, call us on 9545 1800 or go to our website 2SSR.com.au and click on membership to download the application form.
Doesn't love a barbecue? Well, it's on again at Bunnings Kirrawee. The barbecue is hot and the drinks are cool, so come and meet the team at 2SSR from 8am to 4pm as they tantalise your taste buds with the great smell of sausages and onions on fresh bread together with your favourite sauce, cool drink and all served by the friendly team from your local community radio station 2SSR 99.7 FM, the sound of the Sutherland Shire. Great food, great drinks and great people. Love to see you there.
Hey guys, Kieran here with the Antiques and Alternate Show, playing you Aussie alt and older antique songs. Join me 6 to 7 p.m. Fridays for a bit of fun and a fresh new quiz every week. Tune in then.
2SSR FM 99.7.
It's time now for Sutherland Shire local news.
New South Wales police have busted a major drug and cash operation in the Sutherland Shire. Six people have been charged over their alleged involvement in the supply of prohibited drugs across Sydney and the Monaro region. Four men, aged 23, 26, 27 and 29, were arrested by the Tactical Operations Unit in Caringbah South at about 11 a.m. on November 24. Investigators seized 5,000 MDMA pills and about 280 grams of cocaine, along with $185,000 in cash. The total estimated potential street value of the MDMA and cocaine seized throughout the investigation is more than $750,000. Shortly after the arrests, homes at Caringbah South and Loftus were searched, where a 32-year-old man and a 26-year-old woman were arrested and taken to Sutherland Police Station. Police will allege in court that the group were involved in a large commercial-scale supply of prohibited drugs. Education Minister Sarah Mitchell has confirmed contaminated material deposited at Lucas Heights Community School contained asbestos. However, Ms. Mitchell shed no light on what action had been taken against senior school staff over the matter, which will cost taxpayers more than $10 million in clean-up expenses. It has been reported that the contaminated material was brought onto the school without its knowledge or consent. Also in the news, local member for Cook, Scott Morrison, has been censured in the House of Representatives for failing to disclose to the Parliament and the public his self-appointments to a number of ministries whilst Prime Minister. Addressing the House in a 25-minute speech, the former Prime Minister apologised for his lack of transparency and accepted the recommendations of a report into the controversy.
Mr. Speaker, I acknowledge that the non-disclosure of arrangements has caused unintentional offence and extend an apology to those who were offended. But, Mr. Speaker, I do not apologise for taking action, especially prudent redundancy action in a national crisis in order to save lives and to save livelihoods.
Mr. Morrison went on to defend his record, including quoting billionaire businessman Bill Gates, who described Australia as the gold standard when dealing with a pandemic, saying that if every country responded the way Australia did, then we wouldn't be calling it a pandemic.
Those who now wish to add their judgment today on my actions in supporting this censure motion, I simply suggest that they stop and consider the following. Have you ever had to deal with a crisis where the outlook was completely unknown? In such circumstances, were you able to get all the decisions perfectly right? And where you may have made errors, were you fortunate enough for them to have had no material impact on the result, and the result itself proved to be world-leading? Once you have considered your own experience, or perhaps when you have had more in government, then you may wish to cast the first stone in this place.
Furthermore, the Greens are considering once again referring Mr. Morrison to the Parliamentary Privileges Committee over the secret ministries saga, where he could be forced to formally apologise depending on the results of the investigation. And that's what's happening in Sutherland Shire local news.
Hi, Kirk Pengilly from In Excess here. And whether it's music, sweet things, puppies, movies, we all love our treats. But our eyes need treating too. 300,000 Australians, including me, are affected by glaucoma. Diagnosed early, glaucoma can be managed. Left undiagnosed, it can cause blindness. So treat yourself by treating your eyes to a simple test. Book your test at treatyoureyes.org.au today.
It's bad enough when a child is sick, but when it's one of the family, all you want to do is help. Grant Dodds, presenter of New Sensations Drive, needs our help. His son, Isaac, has a condition called citrullinemia type 1, which can result in brain damage, coma, or even be fatal due to high levels of toxic ammonia building up in the body. But help might be just one bark away. An assistance dog would be able to smell high ammonia and raise the alert. But that sort of help doesn't come without a price. To donate, go to mycause.com.au and search for Isaac, I-S-A-A-C. And help fund an assistance dog that could change his life dramatically. Thank you.
The Troy Murphy Show, driving you home Thursday nights on 2SSR FM 99.7.
Today, December 1st, is World AIDS Day. And each year, on important days of awareness like today, it's good to check in with those who are at the forefront of dealing with the HIV epidemic that has plagued Australia along with the globe since the 1980s. Joining us on the show is Darryl O'Donnell, the CEO of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations. Darryl, welcome to the show. Can you please tell us all about World AIDS Day?
World AIDS Day is really a moment of reflection more than anything else. We've lost so many people to the global AIDS pandemic, more than 37 million lives lost over the last 40 years. So first and foremost, World AIDS Day is a time to remember all the people that we've lost, all of our loved ones. But it's also a moment for us to reflect on where we're going in the response to the epidemic. There's such an incredible mobilisation of effort at a community level, among scientists, among clinicians, among governments, that really, this is when we take stock and look forward and say, right, where are we going from here and how can we bring this epidemic to an end?
Let's talk numbers and data. How are we as a country doing when it comes to HIV in Australia?
Well, Australia actually has a really good story to tell about HIV. We really jumped on board, jumped on the epidemic very, very early in the 80s. And what it's meant is that we've actually had been able to keep our numbers in check and actually keep reducing those numbers over time. So last year, for instance, in 2021, we had the smallest ever number of people diagnosed with HIV. That's 552 people, and that's about a half of those diagnosed 5 years previously. And so we're seeing this really nice reduction in HIV diagnoses over time, but we've still got a way to go.
That's fantastic news. How much of that do you feel is has been affected by COVID and lockdowns?
It's certainly a factor, and at this stage where we're sort of emerging from COVID, but in that 2021 data, last year's data, obviously there were still lockdowns in different parts of Australia. So is there something sort of hidden in the data? Are we worried that there might be an increase? There's certainly concern about that. But the overall trend of decline is absolutely real.
Australia has a commitment to end HIV transmission by 2025. Are we still on track to achieve this?
2025 is getting very close.
It is.
it's really getting close now. But actually, we can do this. It's part of what's so exciting about working in the HIV response today, whether you're a GP or a community worker or a researcher. Australia, for all of the concerns we have about Medicare and about access to a GP, we're actually better place than anywhere else in the world to really drive ourselves towards an end to the HIV transmission in this country. So 2025, it's really short time frame now, but we do believe that we can get that number of diagnoses, 552, we can really drive that further down over the coming few years.
The world was inspired to work together during the COVID pandemic to work on the vaccine. The scientific community was astounding when it came to working together. Has that drive continued into or had any impact on the fight against HIV?
Well, I think it's, wow, what is possible when there's a sort of a global commitment, when countries are working together is quite astonishing. And I think we saw in science in particular that when the world faces unprecedented challenges, it can really step up our scientists and medical and clinical leaders. They can really step forward and achieve some incredible things. And we saw that in COVID. It means that when we're talking about something like HIV, we know that that science is what's going to get us to an end to HIV transmission. I think one of the really big differences between COVID and HIV was, we got very quickly to this point where a vaccine was on the radar, where we were all sort of able to step forward and to get those first doses. Whereas, we're 40 years into the HIV epidemic now, and today we do have all of the tools we need, whether it's condoms or whether it's pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a prevention pill people take if they're at risk, or we have effective HIV treatment. But it took us a long time to get there, and so we've really required a lot on people not assuming there's some sort of magic solution that they could sort of, but really making choices in their lives about how they're going to keep themselves safe and how they're going to keep their partners and loved ones safe over a very long period of time.
Every couple of years we hear in the news that we're one step closer to finding a cure for HIV. Now, as far as I understand at the moment, once you have the infection, your body can't get rid of it. How close are we? Is there a chance of a cure, or should these sort of news reports just be taken with a grain of salt?
Always a grain of salt. I think some of the news reporting about cures and the search for a cure on HIV, they can actually be quite distressing for people who live with HIV because, of course, whether we're living with HIV or, we're friends or loved ones of people who live with HIV, we want nothing more than the day when there's going to be a cure. Mm. Even though we've got a great effective treatment, the cure is the holy grail. That's what will finally end the epidemic globally. But we're still a long way off. COVID, interestingly, has helped us a lot. And, by opening up new avenues for research into a HIV cure. But in fact, COVID research was also helped a lot by a lot of the work that's been done in HIV. So hopefully that pushes a little bit further forward. But we're still a long way away from being able to say if there's an effective cure for HIV on the horizon.
The previous health minister, last year, announced a $39 million grant to provide HIV treatment for people ineligible for Medicare, and $11 million for the continued work of peak HIV organisations such as yourself. Has that support continued with the new federal government?
Yeah, in fact, those were really important announcements on World AIDS Day last year. And, of course, in May this year we had the federal election and a change of government. For AFAO, we work across the parliament. It's very important for us to make sure that we're, continuously educating and building awareness and maintaining commitment with our parliamentarians at a federal level. And so regardless of whether there's a Labor government in power or a coalition government, that we know that, that there's understanding on both sides about the epidemic and about the challenges ahead and how we need to solve those. So we've done a lot of work with Labor in the lead up to the election and through the last parliamentary term, and have been really delighted to see the strength of their commitment on HIV. I think, there's so many things that are on the desk of a health minister federally, so many challenges that are in front of them. But on HIV, because of how well Australia has done to date, and because we now have tools like PrEP and HIV self-tests, it means that there really is an opportunity for this minister, Mark Butler, to drive Australia to be this leader in ending HIV transmission.
Is there anything, before we wrap up, is there anything that you feel is important that people should know today on World AIDS Day about HIV and AIDS?
The most important thing is not to be frightened of HIV. We have all of the tools to prevent HIV, to test for it if someone might have been at risk, and to treat it effectively if someone has HIV. So we're in a really exciting, really new age for the management of HIV in our community. But perhaps most importantly on World AIDS Day, for us to think about the impact of the epidemic on so many people around the world. And here in Australia, that impact has been felt particularly in the gay community here in Australia. And for people with HIV, there continues to be, as you've talked about, this kind of stigma that attaches itself. Many people with HIV, are considered, they're careful about who they talk to about their HIV status because of that fear that someone might not react well. And, you know, that's not an unfounded fear. We see in the most recent survey, around one in four Australians say that they would treat a person with HIV negatively if they knew that that was their HIV status. And that's still a distressingly high, number of people who have no reason to fear or to be concerned about a person with HIV, but are still, you know, prepared to behave differently, negatively, towards that person. So the message on World AIDS Day is to reach out and to be curious, to be educated, to be informed about HIV, and particularly to make sure that all people with HIV in Australia feel supported and understood by the Australian community.
Daryl O'Donnell, CEO of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations, thank you so much for your time today.
Troy, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Hear what they said on the radio?
No, I missed it.
I had to drive the kids to school.
I was at work.
I was helping with the sausage sizzle.
Catch the latest news updates, listen to podcasts, join us live with the Community Radio Plus app.
Hear what they said on the radio? Yeah, I was listening.
I was listening in the car.
Yeah, I was listening on my phone.
On the radio? I was listening when I got home.
Whatever you're doing, take us with you. Community Radio Plus, your home of community radio. Download from the App Store or Google Play.
You're listening to The Troy Murphy Show.
Ponder this, ladies and gentlemen. Since the Earth is the third planet from the Sun, technically every country is a third world country.
2SSR FM 99.7.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, did you know 2SSR 99.7 FM is on Facebook? See what shows are on each day with the Daily Post graphic. Now, let's look at relationship news and the new relationship terms that are going around. In particular, a new term that has popped up. It's called a situationship. Not a relationship, a situationship, which appears to be the new and possibly politer way to say, I'm not sure what we are, but I'm having fun having adult cuddles with you. The term saw 49% of Aussies adding it to their online dating profiles, and 1 in 10 people who were surveyed by one of the dating apps, I think it was Tinder, said that they preferred a situationship as a way not to rush into getting into anything serious whilst also allowing themselves the freedom for other relationships to form. Back in my day... I'm not really that old, but, you know, let's have some fun with it. Back in my day, we used to call that sleeping around. I guess a situationship has less stigma. Also, 2022 found that one-on-one dinners are no longer in fashion, as single people are opting for activities like walking and video games, proving that some pandemic habits are here to stay. You know what? I think the last date I went on was a walking date. I can't remember the last time I sat down on a dinner date. Nothing worse than having to eat in front of someone else. Anyway, and also, this study found that there's no more booze when it comes to the dating game, with a whopping 82% of Australians opting to stay sober on dates. A lot of this just sober friends with benefits behaviour. Why do we have to redefine these things? Why? Why? Anyway, from all things The Troy Murphy Show, visit www.thetroymurphyshow.com. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the breaking news stories of the day. And later on, which is not that far, we've only got 10 minutes left in the show, we'll be taking a look at the word of the year. But first, 30 seconds of calm. Because in this crazy world we live in, We all need little bits of calm. So join me and take a breath in and out. Don't forget the out part, because that's very important here on The Troy Murphy Show.
The Troy Murphy Show presents 30 Seconds of Calm.
Do you feel calm? I do. Then now let's spice things up by getting back into the show.
You're listening to The Troy Murphy Show.
Ponder this, ladies and gentlemen. The ring finger is the only finger that doesn't convey a meaning when it is raised alone.
2SSR FM 99.7.
The Troy Murphy Show.com.au is the only place to get all things Troy Murphy Show that we have on offer on and off the air as we file this next segment under end of year reporting. That's right. End of year reporting. It's December, ladies and gentlemen. How fast did this year go? I tell you what, they're getting faster and faster. I know I say that every year, but they just seem to be. It's Christmas. I actually put my Christmas lights up this week because normally I would do it on the 1st, but that's today. And because I'm here at the radio station, did it early in the week. And a lot of other people are starting to join this getting Christmas decorations up early habit. I guess we all need a good Christmas. It's been a weird, weird couple of years. But let's talk. The word of the year for 2022. And the word of the year for 2022 is gaslighting. Yes, this according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. The term means to grossly mislead or deceive someone, especially for one's own advantage. This, of course, is according to the dictionary, because that's where you go to find out the terminology of a word or what a word means. Or you could go to Google. Google's often good at answering that. But the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, they say that gaslighting means to grossly mislead or deceive someone, especially for one's own advantage. To psychologically manipulate a person, usually over an extended period of time, so that the victim questions the validity? Oh my goodness. You know what? I've gone all show without having a major pronunciation mishap, and the god of radio teaching, which is one Paul E. Routledge from Smooth Jazz, who trained most of us here in how to do radio, he called me before my show and he said, "Hey Troy, I listened back to last week's show and you mispronunciated Australia." And I probably did it Australia. I think I said Australia or something bogan. And here I have gone and mispronunciated a word in the final 10 minutes of the show. I will get another call this week. Anyway, moving on. What was I saying? There we go. The extended period of time that the victim questions the validity of their own thoughts, perception of reality or memories, and experiences confusion, loss of confidence and self-esteem, and doubts concerning their own emotional or mental stability. That's the dictionary's defining term for gaslighting. Now, speaking to the Associated Press, Peter Skoloski, the Merriam-Webster's editor-at-large, said that the action of gaslighting implies intentional deception. So maybe we should change the word politics to gaslighting? I don't know. That works on all sides, left, right, and to the sides. Searches for the term gaslighting, get this, ladies and gentlemen, have gone up 1,740% this year alone. I'll repeat that. 1,740% compared to last year. Not in general, compared to last year. But unlike other words that made the word of the year in previous years, there has not been one event that has set off this sudden rise in popularity. Like, you know, someone famous saying it, or a celebrity case, or, you know, an influential moment in time. Nope. Just a new word in everyone's vocab. You are listening to The Troy Murphy Show.
You're listening to The Troy Murphy Show. 2SSR FM 99.7.
With 5 minutes to go, let's talk about some of the breaking news stories of the day. The federal government has announced that neither the official yes or no campaigns for the referendum to enshrine an Indigenous voice to Parliament in the Constitution will receive taxpayer dollars from the federal government. The proposed changes were announced on today, Thursday, in a joint statement by Attorney General Mark Dreyfus, Indigenous Australians Minister Linda Burney, and Special Minister of State Don Farrell, and Special Envoy of the Uluru Statement of the Heart, Patrick Dodson. That's a lot of people making a very simple statement, but I guess they've all got to be there, you know, to make the announcement. The statement said, and I quote, "The government believes campaigns in the Voice referendum should be organised and funded by the Australian community and does not intend to fund a yes or no campaign for the forthcoming Voice referendum." Now, you will remember that the federal government, they funded the yes-no campaign for the same-sex marriage law change. Well, this is a referendum, a little bit different. It's still being put to the Australian people to vote yes or no. Earlier this year, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese announced he believed that Australian people should be asked a simple and clear yes or no referendum question regarding whether an Indigenous voice to Parliament should be enshrined in the Constitution. Just a personal note on this one. Whilst I totally agree, I think we need to know as people before we vote the details of what is planned. We haven't got details. All we've been told is, do you think there should be one? And we don't know what happens if we say yes. So mark this space. We will be covering this more and more as we get closer to the voting period, as we find out more details about it. Now, also in the news today, new data out today was revealed that the number of households carrying energy debt has increased by 39%. This is people who have more than $2,500 in unpaid energy bill debt and are on some form of repayment plan. That's a total of 170,000 Australians in this situation, and we're only just at the beginning of this energy crisis. Federal Treasury has warned that prices will increase by 50% over the next 2 years. Do the math. This is not good. And to help with this, the federal government, well, they wanted to put a price cap on coal and gas, you know, to keep prices down for the average Australian who is struggling with cost of living as inflation goes up. But Queensland and South Australia are rejecting this. They say essentially that it's up to individual states, like New South Wales, to invest in their own coal and gas supplies to lower their own prices rather than cap their state's sales, preventing investment and revenue from sales. Crazy. Absolutely crazy, ladies and gentlemen. You'd think, you know, Australians, we would help each other, but it doesn't seem like we are doing that at all at the moment, and we are in for tough times ahead. Again, another topic we will closely cover here on The Troy Murphy Show.
Join The Troy Murphy Show on Facebook. Search The Troy Murphy Show, click like, and join the conversation all week long.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. The Troy Murphy Show done and dusted for another week. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure being with you all afternoon, well, for the last hour, really. Thank you. Thank you to all the guests who came on. Great chat with the CEO of AFAO about World AIDS Day. And normally we would have a League of Alone with Lauren. She's no longer broadcasting her show. So up next, we cross over to the CBAA, which will broadcast until tomorrow morning for Morning Mix with Dom from 9 a.m. Thank you very much for joining, and I will see you next week. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Search The Troy Murphy Show. Click like, follow us on all those amazing fun things. And my friends, I will see you all next week.
Radio News.